This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Sheriff Chris Nanos says the focus has shifted heavily to digital evidence and DNA. He's talking about thousands and thousands of surveillance videos and an unidentified DNA contributor that could still crack the case. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, is back with us to help us walk through what is happening behind the scenes and where the next big break is most likely to come from. I think that's what everybody is waited with bated breath for. Hopefully there will be this big break, if there is to be a big break or some sort of break. Even a small break at this point would be welcome beyond the speculation that we've all been doing now for roughly 5 months. If we're going to get a break, where is it going to come from, Jen?
You know, I still think the number one piece of evidence is Porch Guy's face. I know somebody knows exactly who that is. And it could be that they just don't know about this case. I think oftentimes we think, because we're true crimers and newsies, that, you know, there is information that everybody knows what we know, but people don't. They're so busy with their lives. So that could be one of the cases. The other thing, of course, is they're scared to death to say anything. But nevertheless, I think that's number one. Number two, I do like the videos, but again, this is nothing new. They've been doing that from minute one, trying to figure out. What I cannot fathom is, in this time frame we have from 2:30 in the morning, such a finite time frame, I find it odd that they cannot narrow down at least some image of a vehicle. The hair, I think, is problematic, although, you know, I always try to be optimistic, because hairs are transient. As we've discussed, that thing could be from a grocery store clerk that got on the bag, that got in there. You know, they're so transient. But we have to remain hopeful that if they even are able to decipher who it is via genetic genealogy, which could take months, that it comes back to somebody that's related to Porch Guy.
Are there any interviews you'd actually redo again, or that you direct, like that private eye or anyone else to re-interview, or even the FBI at this point with what they know now? Because, and we discussed this early on, you know, once you get a little more data, when you re-engage people, you have a little bit more directed questions you can ask, get a little bit more baseline, a little more understanding. At this point, do you think they should, or have already gone back and re-interviewed any specific people or in the surroundings, or even, you know, workers, anything that you think would break it on the human side versus the cyber side?
You know, when you look at the videos that we've seen over and over again of the different canvases that have been done in both Annie's neighborhood and in Nancy's neighborhood, it's, to me, kind of concerning. I mean, they were out there so many times, different campuses. And so I would not want to do that, because I think what happens is, over time, people's memories tend to get not only stale, but they tend to sort of almost imagine things that happen.
Yeah, false memories start. Yep.
And that's a huge problem. So I would be reluctant about those kinds of people. I think it would be very interesting to make sure that I knew from the church group that she was close to, and anyone else she's close to that maybe we don't hear about, anything that Nancy might have said. I know these questions had to have been asked, but if somebody's remembered something along the road. Now, when that's a lot different than, I think, the neighborhood canvases, I think that could be important.
Yeah, I agree. The leakage over time after you reflect is really key and critical, because those teeny little wobbles can be noticed in hindsight so much clearer when you actually have some distance from the emotional attachment to it. I'm also curious. Tony, I know you're going to say something.
You're good.
I'm also curious. You know what I'm really shocked at? And Tony, I know you're looking at this too, because it's your hometown, in the sense of Walmart headquarters. I'm really shocked they haven't been able to come up with anything for purchases on that stuff. Are you, Jen?
Well, initially I would have agreed, but Walmart is so huge. I did a deep dive into that. It's amazing how many millions of customers a day. I think if you look at that, it's unbelievable. And then, of course, I was tracking even Mexico, because Mexico, I believe Walmart is their biggest retailer. And I just think there is so much to go through on this, on these backpacks, since they're only made there. I still don't think that's a dead end, though. I really don't think it's a dead end.
That's good.
There's so much to go through, so many receipts to try to narrow down. So whenever you're dealing with millions and millions of receipts to look through on that backpack, it just is going to take these analysts, and that's who's doing it, everybody. It's not the people that are the investigators. I believe that work is all being done behind the scenes by the analysts.
And I know this happened after we both got out. You know, there was no such thing as AI being employed with us in law enforcement before we retired. But do you think that they have the ability to take all those receipts and plug it into an AI thing? Because, I mean, Mike Kroc could probably suck that in and look at it in 5 seconds and kind of see if there's a grouping of any purchases like that anywhere. Do you think they have that resource now that they're using or no?
You know, I think Walmart has that.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
Kind of like with Google. You know, they're the technicians. They know their systems the best. I would be very convinced that Walmart is working hand in hand with the Bureau to try to see if they can narrow that focus down.
I mean, you'd really have to. I mean, backpacks alone are going to be a very broad brush to find. It literally is the biggest retailer on the planet. You'd be looking, obviously, you'd want to be, I think, looking in the Tucson general area. There's only so many Walmarts there. I have no idea what the number is, but I'm going to guess 10 to 20 stores somewhere in that general number. I don't know. I think we got 10 to 20 here in Northwest Arkansas. But you're talking that. You're looking at those receipts, so you got the backpack. Then maybe be looking at other equipment that may be used or may have been used or clothing that may have been on said person. If you can find all those things and narrow it down to one single purchaser, but then you're also going to be relying on how did they purchase the product? Was it on a credit card? Was it cash? Was it even in a Walmart? But if we're just at a Walmart where they're getting it, then you would have to be also looking at, okay, you have the information, you have likely, if it was bought in store, your camera or multiple cameras that would be on that person buying. And if they paid with a credit card, that would put some information there. But here's, maybe this is a legal question, but you guys could probably answer it too. What sort of rights do purchasers of products have with something like this to not have their identity given over to the FBI or a criminal investigation for something like this? I mean, does that take some sort of a court order or a subpoena or something to Walmart to reveal customers' identities and purchase history and such for people that have not been charged with a crime?
Subpoena.
Okay.
I mean, there's multiple kinds of subpoenas, right? There's a grand jury subpoena, and then we also have admin subpoenas, but those are typically just used in narcotic and organized crime trafficking, where literally, as the case agent, you write it out, and your supervisor signs off on it, and you go serve it. So the subpoena process, even if it's a grand jury subpoena, is extremely easy. You just have to be working with the local United States Attorney's Office, and you can get one in a couple hours.
Yeah.
They're going to have to do that 100% just to have the legal authority. And then secondarily, whenever you're doing a case, you are doing it as if you were thinking about trial.
Yeah.
Do a case any other way than that, worried about what this is going to look like in trial. That's how you have to do all these cases. So they're going to be dotting these I's, crossing the T's for sure, Tony.
And typically what we do is funny, as you're saying that, Jen's like, wow, a lot of times I just go in and ask a source. But the trial thing is what you got to watch out for. So we would typically ask ahead of time, is this something we'd be able to get if we had this, so that you're not going to waste time on the paper? But yeah, 100%.
What about this in terms of the evidence? And we're waiting for a break here of some sort. And sometimes in many cases that go cold and it takes years to solve them. It's not that it could have been solved if somebody had looked the right way or looked under the right hole 5 years ago. It's that the technology didn't exist for us to be able to examine the evidence and the information at that point in time. What should they be thinking about right now in this investigation that maybe we don't have the technology for quite yet, but maybe coming up 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, that may be able to help identify more information about who was on the porch, who was in Nancy's house that day, that maybe we're just not quite there yet on. Or have we checked the boxes and we're going as far as we can in terms of identifying people through, mitochondrial DNA and things of that nature? Are there things on the horizon that we should be thinking about here? Preserve them, because this may be our linchpin 5 years down the road if we're still at a dead end.
This is one of my favorite questions, because one of the biggest things is this mixed DNA sample, which is not the hair. Mm-hmm. It's be something else, where there, according to Nanos in an interview, he said more than two contributors. And right now in DNA, they cannot separate out more than two. They can do two, but they can't do three or more. And that is one of the biggest things they're working on. That's going to be the aha moment that I think is around the horizon that could help with this case. We don't know whether that's spit, which I still think, because he had that bite light, there has to be a spit all over that place, because when he put it out, took it out, it's on his gloves, and then now he transfers it. Again, we've talked about, I'll forever be just dumbfounded as to why they did not take the vines, because that was commensurate with him putting bite light in and out and then touching the vines. And then obviously we've also talked about how he stood over the mat and they didn't take the mat. It's not that I don't think they didn't process it, but there's so much more that could have been there if they just ended up taking a few swabs. So very concerning there, but that's the piece that I think, if they truly have this mixed sample, could crack the case down the road.
On a technology side, aside from the biogenetic kind of stuff that's going to keep advancing, that they'll do better at, I'm also looking at vehicles. You know, vehicles being wired and vehicles being connected, kind of like smart car, you know, the whatchamacallit, Teslas are, that is getting more and more prevalent. So I also think that as time passes in the future, us being able to track every single vehicle in and out of an area and then establishing that timeline and then look for you know, blips, kind of like we look for cell phone traffic data in and out of an area. But it's easier to turn off a cell phone than it is to turn off a car if they're going to use some sort of vehicle. So I think over time, our ability to kind of zero in and to vehicle anomalies in an area, unless they did everything on foot, which I know one of the theories out there is one of the abandoned houses or house for sale or whatever, but I still think vehicles in the future is going to be even more helpful for us.
And crossing the data with the vehicle information, the vehicle technology information that's showing it, where a vehicle was, where it's not. Number one, they'd have to have a vehicle that does that. Not all vehicles are capable of
eventually.
That. But if they did have one that was, again, I mean, I too am a bit baffled here, Jen. I mean, at some point, there's going to be cameras. There are cameras that show comings and goings from this general area of town.
Maybe.
But I guess how have we not gone anywhere with a vehicle yet? I mean, maybe that's the $10,000 question that nobody really knows the answer to. But I am kind of baffled that there's not at least been like a pool of people that have been looked at. Or have they? Was that the first arrest that we saw in those first couple of days where they detained people and it turned out they had nothing to do with this? Was that the initial lever that was pulled and it turned out the obvious ones that were on the cameras were not in fact the people? I don't know.
I think those first two people were in the spotlight because of their appearance and people in their circle somehow thinking they were Porch Guy, but by not only the way they looked, but also different things going on in their lives that, you know, in terms of their jobs, in terms of the delivery situation, one losing their house, another being apparently little bit in the criminal world, things like that. And so they had to clear them, clear it up one way or the other, that they were involved or they weren't involved. But back to this car notion. So there is a map out there and you can go about 23 minutes and basically get out of that neighborhood and avoid lights. So if you turn your car off, you could just be tooling around. And even if people have Nest or Ring, and again, these cars are way off the road where you would be going, there was only one portion of this roadway where there was a school and there were a couple lights there. But if you're all darked out, blacked out, which that's what I would be doing, you can go a long way without hitting road. But sooner or later, you have to hit a road. You have to hit a highway or a thoroughfare to get out of it.
What about cell phones? I mean, that was the other thing here. I mean, initially, early on, it seemed, you know, I don't know, I had a lot more confidence they were going to figure this out at the early stages. I think a lot of us did, because the thought process was, okay, combine a couple things, the digital purchase, the digital history, if we could find that, combined with cell phone tower data of somebody in the area. Cell phone tower data has done a lot for other cases. I'm thinking of Koberger. I'm thinking of, okay, we were able to show that your vehicle pinged here. If there was a cell phone, there's only so many cell phones that ping off of a tower that is close to Nancy Guthrie's home. So if they had a cell phone, one of those pings belongs, or several of the pings belong, to the people who were at that house. But then the thought process of tracking all of those pings down might be a little difficult. I suppose you could cancel out some of the folks who have always been there every day, where their phones are just charging at night and pinging, and you could see the pattern there. I don't know. It just seems like there should be a way to cipher through this data and see some of the outliers that are not normally pinging in this area and go, okay, let's parse through these folks and see what we can find.
I don't think they used any cell phones. I don't think they had them in the area.
I
really think it was a two-way radio.
Yeah.
HT. And these are so, you can use these so well covertly, where you just have to squelch. You just have to squeeze it and you can say yes, and squeeze it twice and say no.
Yeah.
So they're so critical. And I tell you, that photo, I can see the antenna.
Yeah, you've always said that you thought that is a two-way, right?
Yep, I'm really convinced of that.
And I'm with you. You know, just the vibe you get off of that. This, if they even had cell phones, him or multiples, these would be burners. These would be something that would probably be bought in that Walmart purchase, and then their use of them. These do not look like cell phone users to me. And it's not because of being sleuth. I just don't think they have the capability.
But who's not a cell phone user today, Rob? I mean, I don't even...
You'd be surprised. So when you are, and Jen has much more experience doing criminal activities than I did in the
Bureau. Expand on that.
So anytime we did an operation, I mean, I kept upstairs in my house here. I had like four or five burner phones that were bought from random places over a period of time. And if you're about to do an operation, we would activate a burner phone. Okay. And then we would activate it and we would use activations from other places in the country. So it would mask it. And then when you bought it with, you know, an undercover ID, it's masked even more. So, I mean, use of burner phones for operations like this, and this is just a couple of wonks like me doing it. So, and if you have someone that's doing criminal activity, that's exactly what you're doing. And then all you do, you know, so then if you think about it, first you're using burner phones that were purchased in other areas around the country. And then if they had maybe three marbles rolling around upstairs and not two, they turn it off in the area. So they do a Koberger, which was he was using his own phone, but turn it off, which is obvious as living hell. But these guys, if they're turning them off, just like Koberger, and they're licensed someplace else, and it's very, very hard. So even if they did, even if they were able to identify a cell phone blip in the wobble, being able to track it back to an individual, because if it was purchased somewhere else in the country, it was initiated, you know, it's so easy to get a burner phone and not in true name somewhere else. That's why.
I mean, and that tells us more about the suspect themselves than as well. I mean, you have we see so many cases where the suspect's cell phone is literally their cell phone, is registered to them. That would tell us that somebody thought far enough ahead to be using a burner device for whatever their purpose was here. That's some level of sophistication. That doesn't take much. You can go to the Dollar General and buy your burner phone. But it is a thought process. It's more than just I'm running around here this weekend and I'm going to go rob some stuff from old people and this went horribly wrong. It does show a level of planning and sophistication and certainly a concerted effort not to get caught.
You know, listen, this guy is likely a mope, as we called them in the FBI.
I agree.
But this mope did a lot of things right. Whether he got enough of television, whether he thought, what do I need for my costume? And he put it together, because that's what it looks like with the mismatched holster and the, it's a cheap affair, definitely, that he's rigged out in. But he thought through everything. And then he had a lot of factors that helped him environmentally. That how that's obscured with all of those trees, the deepness and darkness of night, all of that played into this. And, you know, I've been more and more believe that this could be, you know, something where the puppeteer is more very organized. I've talked about French attacks. This being a modification of one of those, would not surprise me.
And that's what I want to get into here next. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube on where things are at with the evidence in the Nancy Guthrie investigation. Go ahead and drop it there. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.